There's nothing free in this world except for the grace of God. And of course, podcasts like this are free, like Except the Mystery. This week, Jackie, Frank, my hero, and myself watch the Coens remake of the classic Western, True Grit. JFIO presents.
What? Are you kidding? We got us a family here.
This ain't no coon, huh?
Okay, I'm not gonna sit here and debate.
I'll show you the life of a man!
You will find a fortune. It would not be the fortune you seek.
I suppose you think you've raised hell.
When I've raised hell, you'll know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana Abraxas. I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's the most you ever lost in the coin toss?
Sometimes knowledge is precious.
Accept the Mystery, a Coen Brothers podcast.
This is Accept the Mystery. It's the show where we talk about every single Coen Brothers movie in absurd, ridiculous, utter, absolute, excruciating levels of detail. My name is Josh Richmond. Sitting across from me is my co-host, the lovely Jackie Lechtolze.
Oh my god, you forgot to say I was talented and all that other stuff.
It's implied. I'll switch between them. The amazing. Hi. The incredible.
I'll take it all as, yeah, implied. I know that's what you meant.
I think with today's movie, you've officially heard every soundbite in that
intro.
No,
there's one I was missing. I was listening, but there's one thing that I haven't at the very end of it.
Are you sure? I think you got all of them.
Uh-uh.
Wait, let's listen. JFIO.
What movie is that? We got us a family here.
Raising Arizona.
Yes. True Grit.
True Grit.
I'm not going to sit here and debate.
Fargo.
Uh-huh.
That was Barton Fink. What's this?
What's it called? The one with Clooney? A Brother.
Oh, Brother. Yes.
When I've raised
Village Crossing.
Know it.
Something is very wrong. I don't want Santana.
Serious Man.
Serious Man.
I've just been in a terrible auto accident.
What's this one?
The most.
Oh, yeah.
No Country.
No Country. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes knowledge is
Accept the Mystery. I don't know what that last part is.
Sometimes knowledge is a curse.
Which one is that from?
It's kind of obscure, but it's in The Man Who Wasn't There.
I can't believe I didn't
catch
that.
Right after what's his name? Big Dave's wife describes after how Big Dave was abducted by aliens and was never the same after that.
The problem is I could never really hear it in the intro.
Yeah.
So I wasn't, when I heard it in the movie, I probably didn't notice a connection.
Got it.
So that's a problem on your end.
Okay, it's my fault. It's fine. It's my fault.
I'm just kidding. I just wanted to also comment and say that I love the intro so much. I've always really liked it. But then seeing what references you pulled out and made into the intro is so awesome. So
now, A+. Now you can listen back and you've got all the context for it.
Lots of clap emojis and trophy emojis, all that.
Any hard eyes? Any cat hard eyes?
Lots of cat hard eyes.
Yay.
Uh-huh.
Look, here we have another person on the show we haven't introduced yet.
Hey.
Great guest.
Don't talk until I introduce you. You were doing so good. You were sitting there politely. Now it's ruined. Today on the show, he's a comic. He's an improviser. He's on the team Part Wolf with us. He's my hero. He's your hero. He's the hero the world needs. Frank, my hero, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
So nice to have you.
I
guess technically you were on the show in the guise of Felix Frisbee for the Cannoli of Promise Hill podcast.
That is right.
How do you feel about your work on that episode?
I liked it. It was a fun game.
I think it was fun. Fantastic.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Had a good time.
Yeah, it was good. Good stuff.
You should also introduce Cheetos. That's our other guest today.
Our other guest today is a snack food developed by the Frito-Lay Company. And it contains no real cheese, to the best of my knowledge. Please welcome Cheetos.
Welcome. Great to be here.
Cheetos sounds like?
Yeah, Cheetos sounds like me.
It just sounds like you?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? If I were to imagine an anthropomorphized bag of Cheetos, that's about what I would imagine, too. just sounds like Jackie.
That's right.
No voice change.
Uh-huh.
Not even Jackie trying to do a Chester Cheetah voice.
Exactly.
What does Chester Cheetah sound like?
I don't know. I just started imagining the Kool-Aid guy.
Cheetos.
Yep.
We should get into our first segment.
Fine.
It is a segment where we ask our guest questions loosely inspired by the movie of the week. It's a segment called Inside Frank, My Hero.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Oh no!
So, the movie True Grit.
Yes.
It's a Western. And it takes place in the West. And there's lots of big animal encounters, and Maddie loses her arm due to a snake bite.
Sure.
Have you ever had a run-in with a snake?
I've seen snakes.
You've seen snakes?
But up in the hills, when I was, they'd be crawling around. I've seen them.
What kind of snakes?
Yeah, what kind of snakes?
I don't know.
They're big?
Probably harmless, but they could get big, yeah.
Do you think they were rattlesnakes?
No.
There's a lot in California.
I mean, did you hear a rattle?
Well, my parents were walking my dogs once, and then this, they saw a snake, and they went up to it, and it started rattling, and they both jumped back. and then it was a rattlesnake.
Why did they go up to it?
They were dogs, you know.
They're dogs. Wow. I thought you said your parents went up to it, and I'm like, why would they do that?
Yeah.
Ooh, it's a snake. Mom, Dad, stop. What are you doing?
That's exactly how I imagined it.
Yeah, so have you never been bitten by like any wild animal or any animal?
No, I don't think so.
That's lucky. That's good. I've been bit by a snake before.
Me too.
Multiple times, actually.
Really? Your story first.
Mine is because of my past as a radio daredevil on the Jason Ellis show.
Oh my God.
Where occasionally we would do things like allow snakes to bite us. Not poisonous snakes, obviously, but just the worst was actually I had got an anaconda to bite me.
Wow.
And it's got like rows of teeth like a crocodile.
Wow.
Really? And oh my God.
Yeah, and it will clamp down and like lock in for a second and then let go.
Ugh.
It hurts for a second. And then you just have this gnarly looking bite on your arm, uh-huh. and then it's fine. You clean it off with some Neosporin.
I think I was bit by an anaconda too. Well, I think so because it was one of those things where, you know, somebody comes with a snake to show all the kids a snake, and I must have been like a teenager. And it was like the kind of just like they like put it on your arms and stuff, you know, like holding the snake, and it was big, so whatever that is. And it definitely, like, it bit me. Like, it bit my hand. And then I was like, it bit me. And, like, nobody believed me. Right. And I was like, no, like, it
guys,
bit me. And
there was it bit me.
Yeah, and everyone's like, no, these snakes don't bite. Like, the whole vibe was like, no, it's totally safe. It's not going to bite you. But this one definitely bit me. And I don't remember what happened afterwards because nothing bad happened afterwards. But it was just like, no, there's, like, a snake bite on my hand. It was so crazy.
It's just like, it's just like, they're just toys. They're just cuddly little snakes. Nothing bad's going to happen.
Uh-huh.
The snake handler who brought the snakes in on the show is, I mean, first of all, he's just kind of like a madman by himself. And he's very into, like, you know, daredevil activities. But he just gets bit all the time. And I think when you're a snake handler, you're just like, oh, I just get bit by snakes a lot. That's my life. And it becomes like nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really hurt that much. It's just kind of shocking, but it's so weird.
That's what I felt. It's more surprising than anything.
I think that's what's surprising me is that it doesn't hurt. I would think it would hurt a lot.
Snakes, I mean, it hurts, but snakes are, you know, they're more scary looking, I think, than they are.
Well, because they're more dangerous to, like, small animals, right? So, like, if it bit on a little mouse, because they don't chew anything, so they only need, like, that one bite, and then they just, like, swallow everything whole.
I'd rather have a snake bite me than, like, a dog bite me.
Yeah, because a dog will maul you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a snake will just bite you once and leave big marks, but then as long as it's not poisonous, you're good.
Exactly. It'll stare at you and then it'll like dart out and bite and then go back.
They're so horrible. People who have snakes as pets weird me out. Like, I know it's really popular.
Oh, God, I could not agree more.
Like, why? Like what if it gets out and bite? Like,
and people who will sometimes like go to like social gatherings with a snake around their neck, like, oh, it's just cool. It's my buddy.
Ugh, those people are the worst.
Like somebody's carrying a dog in a bag. No, it's not the same thing.
No, it's not. It's such a Los Angeles thing.
LA thing. They also go horseback riding. Maddie goes on a pony and trots the pony around. Have you ever gone horseback riding?
I think so, once in Hawaii. Yeah, it was fun.
It is kind of fun. I was surprised, because I've only gone horseback riding on a couple of occasions. I was surprised how delicate the situation feels when you're on a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like its center of balance is really high, and it's on legs that look really skinny, and I always felt like it's like about to tip over.
Oh, but they're so strong.
No, I know they're really strong animals, and they're, like, used to it, but it just, compared to, like, a car, it feels very fragile. Like, I'm about to, like, get knocked off at any moment every time it shifts from side to side.
Yeah, totally. No, it's, I haven't gone horseback riding, like, that many times. I mean, definitely more times than I can count, but not as much as I would like, because I love horses so much. But I also went horseback riding recently in Hawaii, too, because that's the last time I did it. And my sister's really, really good on horses, and we were so lucky because that day that we went, it turned out that nobody else was going on the trail ride, so it was just us. And he was on the trail, and we also had, like, the best instructor, and also he was, like, so gorgeous, and my sister and I were like, oh my God, we love him. This was really, really funny.
Did he have, like, a cowboy hat and was, like, tan?
He was, like, the biggest baby we've ever seen. It was so weird, and we were like, And it's weird because, like, my sister is a teenager, and I'm, like, an adult, and we were both like, oh my God, we love him. Anyway, the moral of the story is he was so cool, and he, like, loved us, and he let us trot and gallop, which, like, you're not supposed to on these rides. You're just supposed to walk. And the trotting is the really scary part, like, at least for me, because when you're trotting, like, I can't stay on. Like, I literally was like, I'm going to fall off this
horse.
No,
it's like bump, 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 bump.
And I was behind my sister, and my sister has done some classes too, so she's better on a horse, and like she knew how to post, which is like when you put your feet down and like stay on, so you're not like, you're not trying to sit on the horse, you're like kind of standing up, so you're safer. And I just like couldn't post, and I was like, I'm gonna fall off, this is so horrible, I'm gonna fall into the mud, because it was like raining. And then when you gallop though, I find that so much easier, because when you're galloping, it's like smooth, you're just like boom, boom, boom. It's like a really good rhythm. So it's interesting, like the faster you go, the more stable you feel, but if you start trotting, you're like, I'm gonna
die. It's kind of like riding a bike.
Yeah, you exactly. Faster, I guess that's a good point.
It's
yeah.
Like, yeah, you just kind of
just feel like so unstable when you're trotting. So, but I love horses so much.
I just remember having memories of trying to, like, I was really young when I did it, trying to guide the horse, and the horse just kept, like, just pissing and shitting.
You probably had a bad horse.
I think I did have a bad horse, and it kept walking into the weeds and eating leaves and grass.
Well, you have to control them. That's the thing about horses. You have to show them who's boss, too.
Yeah.
You have to be pushier, which you're not pushy.
I'm not a pushy person at all, and I don't want to push a, I don't have to push a car around. A car just does what I tell it. A car is very passive. It's a pushover. Horses have, like, a bite of their own, and I'm not into it.
The cars were invented by, like, really nice guys like you who just didn't want to deal with a horse that they'd have to tell what to do.
I mean, you know what? They were probably just, like, scientists, so you're probably right. They were, like, the nerds of their day. Jackie, I think you got some questions to ask our guest.
I do. Well, this part was really gross, like, the whole when Matt Damon bit his tongue off, and I had to close my eyes like I wasn't looking, but it made me think of, like, what's the worst mouth injury you've ever had?
Oh, gosh. I don't think I've had a bad mouth injury.
Oh, lucky.
Oh, you know what? One time I was shaving in the shower, and this is the last time I ever did it, is like I cut myself right like above my lip, and it kept bleeding like for 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And I was just sitting in there, and I was like, I got to go somewhere, but I can't because it's not stopping. So,
that's so weird.
Yeah, that was the worst one.
Dang, you're so lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had toothaches. I've had to have like a root canal before.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not really an injury, but I had to have my wisdom teeth out.
Okay.
It's probably the most traumatic thing that's happened to my mouth. having to get those pulled pretty young age because they were coming in and they were already starting to hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
But I got to get knocked out for the procedure.
That's
obviously
fun.
One of the few times in my life they've actually got to be completely under for like laugh and guess.
I've never been completely
under. It's so weird. And then I remember waking up. And not realizing that I was like in like still in like a drug chemical daze, and I was trying to ask my mom where I was, and I obviously wasn't making any sense because she just said like, "Sweetie, I can't understand."
Oh, that would be me.
And I was just like gesturing out like paper. I was trying to say paper so I could like write down what I was trying to say, and she gave me the paper, and I apparently scribbled something that not made sense and handed it to her like,
"Oh no,
nothing happened." Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I don't think I've had a really horrible mouth injury either, although I have been punched in the nose when I was a kid.
What? Who punched you with the nose?
Fucking boy.
A
who
boy?
Does that? Yeah.
Who punches a girl in the...
Exactly.
Oh my God.
This little fool. So that's not my mouth.
How old were you guys?
I was 7 or 8.
Yeah.
But it was hard. It gave me a bump on my nose, which this is what you can... I mean, or at because I'm Jewish, but...
At 7, I feel like little boys and little girls are like equally tough.
Well, maybe... Like, wait, back it up. I could have been 8... Or 9. And that I don't think that's true, actually. I really feel like boys know how to punch because they brawl all the time and girls don't because we don't do that. So it was not fair. It was because he wouldn't give my friend's pencil back.
I didn't brawl all the time.
Well, this kind of boy did is what I meant. Like okay. A boy like that was brawling all the time. So that was not fair and really messed up. But like he took my friend's pencil. I was like, give it back. And he's like, no. And I was like, give it back. He's like, no. And then I pushed him and he socked me in the face and there was blood everywhere. It was so horrible. And then after that, I had a bump on my nose.
Oh.
Yeah.
But did it go away?
No.
And still, that's what that bump is?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta show that guy what's what. Have
I mean,
you ever
it's
see
fine.
Him again?
I like my nose. It's fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
I might
no.
have gotten
There's
it anyway
because
I'm Jewish, but like still, right. It's just messed up. You don't punch girls in the face.
Yeah, if you see that guy again, you should just punch him.
You should sue him. Now that you're a lawyer.
I know. Like 15 years. No, it's somewhere like 20 years later. Holy shit. That was 20 years ago.
That was 20 years ago, Jack.
20 years ago, I got punched in the face. Oh my God. I'm getting so old. Okay. Sorry. Next
question.
Yeah, but
you're still, aren't you suffering now?
You still have both your arms.
So the crime is still happening.
Right? That's true. I'm still traumatized.
Frank, have you ever punched a woman in the face?
I have not. I've gotten punched by a woman. I was in
Oh my God, no way.
It was in high school and I was sitting at the cafeteria and I think this girl, I think she liked me, but I was too dumb to even know that. And I was just sitting there, and she like started making like gestures like she was going to hit me. And I was like flinching every single time. And then every single time I flinched, everybody laughed because they're like, he's flinching at a girl. And then finally I'm like, okay, so I guess I don't know why it didn't strike me that I could leave. I just was like, okay, I'll just stand here and get hit. And I just sit here and get hit. And so I just sat there and she just... clocked me
in the face.
Yeah, and then everybody laughed too, and I'm like, well, but then she left at least, so it was at least an end to it.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
so this is how she shows she likes you. She's trying to punch some sense into you.
I guess she was a soccer player. I don't know.
just kind of.
I had no that, ill like, will
that
towards her.
That explains everything.
Actually, it does. I mean, she's like this brawling athlete.
Aren't soccer players not supposed to use their hands? She should have kicked you in the face.
Yeah, so she's like itching to use her hands.
Should have red carded her.
Yeah, that would have been the move, man.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Oh. That's weird.
It's a good story now.
Well, I've never punched a woman in the face outside of the context of a boxing ring.
You've been in a boxing ring?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep. You were in something.
With giant gloves or whatever?
No, with normal size gloves.
Really?
Yep. One of the opponents was my sister.
How long did it take you to get? Like, did you really try to hit them?
Yeah, it was a legitimate boxing fight with people who were approximately in my weight class. It was, I'd say, fairly evenly matched.
Was this?
This was a few years ago.
Having arm wrestled you, I feel like it would be an even fight.
But thank you.
Having arm wrestled both of you, I'm going to say I'm in a different weight class category.
When you're saying it would be unfair to fight me.
I think she would take you. Not.
No, you guys. I'm sorry to put this on the air, but like I've arm wrestled both of you. Yeah. I'm really strong, so I feel like I'm
arm
the next.
Wrestling is a very different kind of competition. You're judging only one kind of arm strength.
From my body.
You're not judging like cardio or overall form and stance.
That's why
I have way more boxing experience than you. And if it came down to it.
But I'm really athletic.
Money's on Jackie. I feel like the only person you and
that
I
is.
The only person you and I remember like when we did that arm wrestling, you're like, we should never fight. Yeah, yes. We're friends. And but I'm like, as I left, I thought, no, we're the only people we should fight because at least then we'd have a chance of winning.
So funny.
I would bet on Jackie if it was.
I think we should have a special JFI or some kind of episode where, you know, go in the boxing ring and see what happens.
So just an audio podcast of us fighting.
No, can we do a video podcast?
Yeah, that one should be video.
I'll hold the camera.
Thanks.
All right.
Perfect.
Cool. All right, we'll make it happen.
We're tabling that for a separate episode.
Very special episode.
I'll hold the microphone.
Jackie, you got anything else?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, this one sounds too much like the coin toss question, but I am curious what
What's
your height.
What's the most you ever lost in a coin toss?
Thank you for the sound.
Except I sounded British when I said
no,
that.
But still sounded like weird like him. That was good. But you know how that girl is so good at negotiating about the horse, which super impressed me, which is sad because I'm a lawyer, so you would think I should be that good. But she was amazing.
She's really good.
Yeah, that was great. It's like, I'm sorry, I'll give you 300.
Wait, we're not trading anymore, are we?
Yeah. And so I was just wondering, what's the maybe highest stakes negotiation you were ever in, or like the most important one?
Verizon. Like,
ooh.
Oh shit,
that's a good one.
I'm already ready for this.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I called in and I was like, they screwed up my bill so many times, but then this time I called in and I was like, I'm on an old plan, and so it's, you know, I don't have unlimited text, believe it or not.
Well, no, we know that. That's why we have all these problems in the group text.
And
Facebook Messenger.
So I call, or Viber, but Viber doesn't notify you when you get a message. So
should we just change that?
You can?
Yeah, we'll change that for you.
Should we also switch to WhatsApp?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So I called in and I'm like, hey, she's all, hey, there's a better plan and you can pay less and get more. And I was like, it doesn't sound like you know what you're talking about. And this is Verizon. You don't pay less and get more. This isn't Metro PCS.
That never happens, yeah.
So I'm like, no, thank you. And but she seemed to think it was a great plan, I could tell. And so she switched me, even though I told her no.
Oh, my God.
And my next bill was $470.
Oh, my God.
And I called in, like, 2 weeks before to say, hey, we got to fix this bill. I didn't authorize it.
Yeah.
And it is taken until... My bill's due on the 27th. It is taken until 2 days ago.
Oh, my God.
To fix it. And I was like, hey, I want... It was the height of Kafka-esque insanity because I was like, I would like to pay my bill. Would you allow me to do that? And they wouldn't let me pay my bill. It's just like, because they wanted me to pay $470. And I'm like, no, I need to go on this old plan. And it was a nightmare. And
that just happened to me and my mom, too.
Oh, is it Verizon?
Yeah.
God, they're awful.
Honestly, like, this just happened on Sunday night. Like, because actually, I saw your post about dealing with Verizon. I was like, oh, I know what he's talking about. So I just got my new iPhone because my other one stopped working and I suddenly had to get a new phone. Because the other one, I think I told you guys, I couldn't swipe right on the screen because half the screen stopped working. So I want to go get my new iPhone. I didn't have an upgrade on my line because I used my upgrade last year, but my mom had an upgrade. So like, okay, you can just use her upgrade and then just switch it to your line, no problem. So I was like, okay, cool. I go online, I order the iPhone, the iPhone's ready for pickup in the store. Of course, that's its own separate hassle. But then I come back to hook up the phone and they're like, okay, Well, for your mom, when I was getting the iPhone on my mom's line, they made me select data, and my mom has a flip phone. Like, she refuses to get anything but a flip phone. She just doesn't want an iPhone right now. Mm-hmm. So, but they're like, well, you just have to sign up for data on your mom's phone. That's what we're telling them at the Apple store, like, and Verizon will just take it off, like, because she won't need it. So we call Verizon, and we're like, oh, we want to use the upgrade on my, we just use the upgrade on my mom's line, but we don't want the data. And they're like, well, you're going to have to keep the data on her line, and then we'll just switch the phone to your line. And I'm like, no, she has a flip phone. She doesn't need the data. And they're like, no, but like, that's just, but that's how it works. And I was like, no, but we don't need
just,
that.
It's just how it works.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. But I know I've done this before, because when I got my iPhone 4, like years ago, we did it on my mom's line. They switched it over to mine. There was none of this crap. And they're like, well, it's a new policy as of a few months ago. And we're like, no, you can't tell us that we can just switch the line. And then like, it took forever. Oh, and yeah, my mom,
That old saw, oh yeah, you can do it, but here's all this stuff.
Right. That's once it. You're actually doing yeah. it, they're like, all this other stuff. And right. so then my mom's on the phone with them.
Because they can just change the rules at any time, but it applies retroactively. Which is not okay. Any sense. No. Yeah.
So then my mom gets on the phone, and so the girl's telling me, she's like, oh, well, you can do a new plan, because you're paying about like $180 right now a month, and you can do this new plan where you get like 10 gigabytes of like shared data, because we have all these lines on our phone. And she's like, it will be $194 a month. And I'm like, okay, that's a $15 difference, it's not so bad. So I asked my mom. She gets on the phone with them, and then it turns out, like with taxes and everything, it's gonna be like $250 a month, right? And she's like, no, that's more. How is that the same? Because the girl kept saying it was the same. And then my mom was like on the phone, like yelling at them. Because of course, my mom has to take over to do this. But she gets on with them, and she was like, no. She's like, well, I'm just going to be screwed. And my mom never talks like that either. So I was like, whoa, like Verizon will like get you and like get you going. And then finally, after yelling at them for a while, they made it work and did not make her do it. And it's like, yeah, you always had the power to not force this on me. Stop being an asshole.
How long was she on the phone? Because these calls are lasting, for me, the shortest one was 36 minutes.
No. Let me just tell you. So my phone stopped working at 2:30. At 12:30 that night, my phone was finally working after all the nonsense I had to deal with. It was insane.
They're a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least it was one call, though. You know, I've had this whole thing with my bill. Oh, three calls, of course.
In one day.
Of course. Mm-hmm. It's a nightmare.
I mean, just phone companies in general. I remember, I think it was AT&T was trying to get DSL service installed in this place. Oh. And they sent over the modem and it wouldn't work. And I had to keep calling them, send out a tech guy. And they said they sent it out and then they didn't send it out. It's nonstop. And they think they can push you around, because what are you going to do? You just call them back and they're protected, because they're millions of miles away. They're probably in India.
So, yeah, just remember, Verizon customer service is a nightmare.
I feel like the most successful negotiation I've ever had is currently undergoing, and I can't talk about the details.
Ew.
But I feel like it's working out in my favor. Good. But besides that, probably the most successful negotiation I had was just with like Wells Fargo trying to get some overdraft charges taken off my account.
That's pretty.
They were kind of like bullshit overdraft charges when you're putting fees on top of fees that already happened, and you're like, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Your rules are bullshit. I talked about it.
Nice. I'm happy to report. So I'm a really bad negotiator, like in life in general. So my mom be like, go to the farmer's market, but at the end of the day, like you can get all the food for like so much cheaper, right? And because foreign families love to bargain at like bazaars, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm just going to pay whatever the price is. So I'm really bad at like negotiating stuff like that. But I did have a case where like one of my clients got sued and was totally bogus. Like, we got sued and like some other defendants got sued. And they were like basically like, trying to extort money out of us for something. And this lawsuit had been going on for like a few years. It was just like one of those endless annoying things. And I had recently started the firm, but I negotiated with the other side, like after so many phone calls, and got them to like settle. And then our client didn't pay anything, which was really awesome. And then the other guys had to pay something, but we didn't. And, but it was the reason that it was like funny anyway, was that there was one point where, like, I was talking to the associate the whole time and we kind of worked it out. And then the partner got on the phone with me another time and he started like bullshitting me. And I kind of like, I started yelling at him. And you guys know, like, I'm not a yeller, mm-hmm. but it got to the point where it was like really heated and I was like really calling him out. And one of my coworkers came by and closed my door. And I thought it was my assistant. But afterwards, I was like, oh, sorry about that if I was really loud. She's like, no, I just thought you were on a personal call and I didn't want you to have your private business all over the office. But also, it sounded like I was like arguing with a boyfriend or something. Right. So it was just really funny that she thought that. But
hey, you know what? You get passionate.
I did get that. Yeah, yeah, it was so great. So
and you got a good deal nice. For your client.
Yeah, and they didn't pay anything or something. So that was really cool. Yeah, but it was a funny time.
It's what it takes. It's what it takes to be a good lawyer. Passion.
Yeah, I think sometimes just because I'm usually like really calm and chill. That's like my negotiation style, and that gets me what I need. But sometimes you just have to fucking yell at people, and that's fun too.
So. You're not listening to Serial, but there's a passionate lawyer in Serial. And she actually completely screws up the whole case. You should listen to that.
I will.
Did you know it's the most popular podcast of all time?
I do know that. Yeah. I'm so crazy. My friend Ellie. You guys, wait, have you met Ellie? Well, you've met Ellie.
I met Ellie.
She's on my birthday, but yeah, Ellie's like started listening to it, and that was the first. That's the first podcast she's ever listened to. So now, like, she listens to podcasts. It's so cute. She's obsessed with it.
It's everybody's like gateway into podcasting.
Which is great.
It's big. It's big for us. Mm-hmm. It's like it's the breakout podcast.
Thank you, Serial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah Koenig. Mm-hmm. Look, I think it's time to get into the meat of this week's show. It's time for a segment we call the Big Reviewski. Yeah! Yeah! Oh, yeah! We're talking about a movie today called True Grit. Mm. It came out in 2010. It is a remake of a book written by Charles Portis that was also made into a movie that came out in 1969. Starring John Wayne in the Rooster Cogburn role. I have not seen that movie.
Oh, it's a good movie.
We have to watch it and do another podcast on it.
To compare it? To compare the two?
I think it's marginally related to the show.
It is. Oh, sure. I mean, do you want to go back and watch the original Lady Killers too?
We have to be
completed. If you want to be that completed, we're going to have to.
But I want to. Yeah, two more episodes. Yeah.
You know that is a way to get two more episodes out of it. Mm-hmm. We can keep the Coen Brothers show going on forever if you want.
Yes!
Again, no, I know of it. It's got a reputation as a very good movie, very good Western, and John Wayne giving a very good performance. You've seen it?
Oh, yeah, I think it's Henry Hathaway that was the director. I could be wrong about that. I do believe so, yeah.
Oh.
But it's really good, yeah. I like both of them.
Yeah, if you were to compare them, how do you think they're similar and different?
No spoilers.
Not to spoil too...
the other one.
A little spoilers.
I mean, this is John Wayne, so there's no cowboy... probably that's better as a cowboy than John Wayne.
Okay, can't say anything more because everything else is going to be a spoiler.
Yeah.
No, I hate spoilers.
I know, but I'm curious. I want to hear some analysis and compare it.
It's a little more... I think the Coen brothers are a little more economical at points. It's interesting to see where they're economical at points and they cut things out that aren't in the... You know, but they're very similar movies.
But I know that I also know that they left other things in. For instance, I know that the ending of this movie was in the book but wasn't in the John Wayne.
Ugh. Right. Spoiler! Can't talk about this.
We've already seen the ending of this movie.
We can only talk about this movie. We can't talk about the other one.
Oh, if you've seen this movie, you've kind of seen the John Wayne movie.
That's what I'm saying. I'm just curious the way
you've pretty much seen, they're the same movie, basically.
It's the same story.
Yeah, same story.
Fine.
But I do at least feel, like John Wayne, he's the archetypal cowboy actor. Jeff Bridges is not that.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. I finally get what you were saying with spoilers. I'm like... Are we saving this for...
No. I literally won't even lie. Like, for example, when we started watching this movie, I was like, I wonder if this one's all existential, whatever, since a lot of the movies we've been watching recently.
And I was about to answer it, and you're like, no!
I was like, don't say it! It's going to spoil it, because I don't even want to... Like, I don't want to know what even kind of movie it's going to be. I just want to completely have, like, no information.
Which is cool. I love that you want to come into everything with a blank slate and make your own opinion. Yeah. I, in some ways, I wish I was more rigorous about that, because sometimes...
You love spoilers!
I do love spoilers, and often if like a movie is coming out that I'm excited about, like Inherent Vice is coming out later this month, which I really, really want to see. So I'll not only watch the trailer, I'll read all the advanced reviews, and I'll try to figure out everything I can about the movie before seeing
it. Oh my God, that's my nightmare.
Which I also realize though completely changes my color my vision of the movie.
Yeah, because
I'll already know if people think it's good or not, or how they think it's good. In a way, I wish that I had, I guess, the restraint to not spoil myself on anything and come in with completely a tabula rasa.
Yeah, I'm really disciplined about
that. What does that mean, tabula rasa? What language is that?
I think it's just Latin for blank slate.
Oh, ancient Latino.
Yes, ancient Hispanic saying.
Very cool.
Frank.
Can I spoil a little bit? Because I want to say one thing.
Yeah,
about True Grit.
Come on.
Let's Jackie, wait, you can... Wait, about the old one?
Yeah.
Sure. Fine.
One thing. It's actually less gritty. And I think that's something that this movie is distinct. It's, you know, you have Maddie talking to Rooster.
Right.
At an outhouse when she first meets him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So stuff like that isn't in the 1969 version because they're still like...
A little more proper, I guess.
Right. It's the 60s and things are a little bit cleaned up for general audiences.
But just that. I'll leave everything else to be unspoiled.
That's good. I mean, I think that's generally the tradition of modern remakes, is they try to make things, because we do have different standards now, a little bit more gritty and a little bit more true to life.
I really liked that outhouse scene. I thought that was great.
Yeah, me too.
Because it was so real.
They're not, say, whitewashing their treatment of, like, Native Americans.
Sure, it doesn't look like, if you look at those old movies, or Bonanza or whatever, you can tell they're in a set. But, right. you know, they made a real effort to make a real town, a real outhouse, real mud, real filth, that kind of thing.
And that's and it's interesting that you're saying this is more gritty, because even if it is more gritty...
Visually gritty.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting about this film is that it's probably the Coen brothers' most just straightforward movie. This is just them doing a Western and executing a classic style, old school Western.
Sure.
Not like a revisionist Western, not like, you know, like an Unforgiven, where Clint Eastwood is doing commentary on his old movies. This is really just doing a straightforward retelling of a classic Western in their style.
Just a well-made play, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
I mean, when you talk about a movie that was a popular movie in 1969 that you're basically almost completely remaking with very little differences, yeah, it's basically just a Western.
Which is, it's really different for them. Because, you know, they will take on other genres and other genre movies, but they'll usually, they'll add their own kind of ironic twists or make it a little bit goofier or more Coen-y. They're not doing that here. Mm-mm. It's a very respectful take on the Western.
It was. Like, I was surprised there weren't a few quirkier characters that made you laugh randomly more. Because that's, like, their thing.
Yeah, you know, when the bear man, the guy in the bear furry suit shows up, he's like, oh, good, we're in for, like, a crazy, quirky, old Coen brothers character.
What I wasn't even expecting that anymore because of the tone of the movie so far. Right. I was like, I wasn't.
But he wasn't even really that. He was just kind of, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm a traveling dentist and veterinarian and stuff.
The most interesting character was Matt Damon's, just saying.
I thought he was really funny. Like
He was the funniest, but he wasn't even like...
Yeah.
He wasn't Coen-esque.
I think the most interesting character is Maddie. But to talk about Matt Damon, I think Matt Damon was very, very good at this.
His character was funny, is what I mean, but like...
Right.
Not as Coen-esque as you would think.
I think it's my favorite Matt Damon movie, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, not just favorite Matt Damon performance, favorite Matt Damon movie?
I think so, yeah.
Because he's been in a lot of really good movies. I don't know. The Departed and The Talented Mr. Departed. Ripley and The Informant. It's some great stuff.
I haven't watched enough stuff with him.
I think The Departed is more of a, like an ensemble thing, you know?
But it's not like this is like a Matt Damon vehicle. Matt Damon's very much a supporting player here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's good in the supporting role. He's not like a scene hog. He's really blending into the ensemble, and he's got great chemistry with the other performers.
I guess I'll say it's a tie for Departed and True Grit as my favorite Matt Damon movie.
All right. But he feels...
With Interstellar... Not bringing up.
Okay, we're not going to get into this. But he doesn't feel like a caricature like he might in another Coen Brothers
movie. Right, exactly.
He might be funny, but he feels like a real person.
Like it's not Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where there's it's so heightened, but it's heightened in a comedic way. It's just you almost think if you went back in time and you talked to some cowboys, you might see that guy, the traveling dentist, and never know his deal, but. You might meet that guy.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point.
The two main Coen Brothers movies this reminds me of is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Because it's for one...
Really?
Because they're the two oldest Coen movies chronologically, and also because they're
both... What about Miller's Crossing? Is Miller's Crossing before?
Miller's Crossing is the other one that I was going to say this reminds me of. In the sense that it's a very classically told story, and that just the overall just sense of old school Hollywood craft. But Oh Brother, I mean, the tone is really different. Oh Brother's a lot goofier.
Yeah, it's much goofier.
But I guess in style, with the fact that you know you have these three characters who are on a quest, and it's kind of an adventure story, and you're going from place to place. It's definitely very, very different in tone.
But. I guess it's just because it's so less comedic, like comic to me.
Right.
Like, didn't even connect them.
It doesn't feel slapsticky in the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think it's so it is mythic though, like the Coen Brothers. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? They're very much remind me of Vogler's mythic writer's journey kind of thing, or you know, basically Star Wars, that whole.
Oh sure, yeah, the hero with 1,000 faces.
Sure, yeah,
the classic myth. Yeah, you do have this kind of untested hero who is going out on an adventure to earn her stars.
And it all ends up
in a very traditional climax where there's a shootout between the good guys and the bad guys, and the good guys win. And
it's really amazing. Yeah, like I love the. It's almost like it reminds me of Star Wars. There are those Star Wars moments when she is given the bag by at the boarding house and her gun is there. That's her lightsaber.
Right.
That's that moment when she takes up her father's gun. And the music swells a little. That's my only complaint with this movie.
And she's got a mentor figure who's kind of guiding her through all this.
Sure.
You haven't complained about the music?
I do think it could be a little more Star Warsian. And
I'm trying to imagine John Williams soundtracking this.
I think it just a touch. You know, that's the only complaint. But you have that mythic moment when she's given the weapon. You have that. Basically, it's her journey, like Luke, into adulthood.
Uh-huh.
You know, that moment when Luke just says, hey, I'm going to go and learn the ways of the Force. There's also that moment where she's has to cross that river, that very palpable Tolkien kind of trope of a river where she crosses into the unknown land, the enchanted forest. And she pushes ahead so hard. I don't know. That's what I was thinking about that.
I was okay when you were about to say that you had a complaint about the music. I thought you were going to say it was slightly too dramatic.
And you're saying it's not dramatic enough.
Give it a little more.
That's so funny because for me, I was like right at the edge because Josh, you had said that like, oh, the music's really good in this, and I think it was very good, but at some moments a little bit too obvious. So I thought you were going to call him out for being too obvious.
I feel like we're Goldilocks and the Three Bears here.
Totally.
Where you're saying it's too dramatic, not dramatic enough, and you're saying it's too dramatic, and I think it's just right. Honestly,
that's so funny.
I think it's one of Carter Burwell's most beautiful scores. It's up there with just like Fargo. It's kind of it's another score that was based off of a kind of like a folk hymn. I think it was like a Scandinavian hymn in Fargo. Here it's Everlasting Arms, which you hear the vocal version of at the very end of the movie. But the whole score is based on that song.
But yeah,
just really sad and elegiac and kind of. Especially after seeing the final scene and you realize this is kind of her reflecting back on her old adventures. It feels very nostalgic.
Yeah.
Now, is he the guy that does all their music or is it just this one?
Oh, yeah. Carter Burwell does all their music.
Oh, very cool.
But sometimes they're a little bit more soundtracky and sometimes the music sounds very different. This is a very traditional classic Carter Burwell score.
Yeah.
I keep using the word traditional and classic here. It feels like a very traditional story to me. And that's why I'll confess that when I saw this movie in theaters... went in 2010. It came out, you know, it got 10 Oscar nominations. It made $171 million at the box office.
Oh my God, it makes me so happy.
It's easily the Coen brothers' biggest hit movie.
It's their Star Wars. It really is.
I guess in that sense,
big
Star Wars.
Summer blockbuster. Sure.
That makes me so happy for them.
And it's why, after seeing a lot of hype for this film and all that, and after watching it in theaters, I came out a little bit disappointed.
This really? Time right
why?
Now?
No. When I saw it in theaters 4 years ago.
See,
yeah.
Maybe if you didn't spoil things for yourself so much, you could just appreciate a movie for the movie that it is.
Maybe.
I think you hype it up. Expectations.
That's probably part of it.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is still a criticism that I still have a little bit now, which is that I like my Coen brothers a little bit...
More Coen-y.
A little bit more Coen-y. And a little bit more willing to take risks and have... big choices and crazy characters.
Yeah, I would say it was measured.
Yes.
It really was. It was definitely like a box office movie.
And
well, I mean, for the Coen brothers, it was a box office movie, right?
Yeah, but right. I think it's a box office movie for anyone. Like, but I mean, like it's a, you know, like it's a normal movie. It's
now, compared to something like Miller's Crossing, I think it's a lot more entertaining.
Yeah.
I think for
Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, I think for
you didn't like Miller's Crossing either?
There's a lot that I really respect about Miller's Crossing, but
whoa.
Definitely
we have the opposite taste.
Definitely slow in places.
I love Miller's Crossing.
I fell asleep during parts of Miller's Crossing, and I felt like I didn't miss anything.
But no, for this one plays to general audiences. I think this is what this is what
sure.
like my mom could see this movie and
totally.
And be like, I love this movie.
Well, I mean, I think that's
my
true.
Mom might
do you guys do you guys think it means that? I mean, I don't think they sold out in any way.
No,
I don't think they did.
I'm not
saying they were doing.
I'm definitely not saying sell out.
It's part of their journey as filmmakers to make a movie like
this.
In
fact, at this point in the Coen brothers' career, where they're so associated with a certain style of movie and a certain brand, to make something that's so earnest and straightforward is actually a risky move for them.
Yeah.
That paid off.
Yeah, I think it was
I mean,
good,
it's not like it's going to be like True Grit, you know, and or Transformers 4, you know. People are going to... There's a certain crowd that's going to go to Transformers 4 that isn't going to go to True Grit no matter what. It's not crassly commercial.
Sure.
Or like
yeah. But it's almost... I mean, it's almost a movie for families in a way. I mean,
no,
there's a couple of moments of shocking violence.
I think I'll agree with you.
Yeah, that's actually true.
But this actually... I mean, this got a PG-13. It's one of the only Coen Brothers movies to get less than an R.
You know, the thing about the Coen Brothers movies is that I've always noticed that the thread that goes through a lot of them is an old school, traditional morality. And what straying from that old school, traditional morality results in... So it's almost like they're very conservative in that regard, filmmakers, from their viewpoint. Not in the sense of taking risk as filmmakers, but in the sense of Just their morality. It's a very conservative
morality. We got way into their morality on the last episode. We did A Serious Man.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think I do see what you're saying, and yeah. I can identify that kind of I'd almost say biblical.
Sure.
At least in the Serious Man context, where it's like, yeah, the good get rewarded and the bad get punished. Although sometimes the good get punished for no reason, too.
I mean, I think I know it's not the Coen brothers, really, but the Fargo TV show. Like, I think they captured the true spirit of what the...
careful not to spoil.
We're definitely going to talk about Fargo the TV show on this one.
I was about to say the end.
I really censor the guests, and I'm sorry for that. But no spoilers is a real policy.
That one I'm going to
agree. No spoilers for Jackie Lashfield Day, the newest Coen Brothers movie, like No Country for Old Men. Get it?
Wait, you haven't seen No Country for Old Men?
No, I have, because we've done it already, but I haven't seen anything we haven't done.
I'm going to agree with Jackie on this. We can't spoil that, but I also agree with you. Sure. It does feel like that Coen Brothers spirit. That's one of the best things about the TV show, actually.
I'm talking about that very last shot. That's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm going to be waiting for the last shot. So now it's all spoiled.
Now it's all ruined, Frank.
It isn't. Trust me. Guys, you won't even think about it.
It's all I can be able to think about.
But in that context, actually, and this is why my opinion of this movie did improve watching it the second time around, because we've been watching all these movies. And I can see how it actually fits into that Coen Brothers lineage of trying to kind of understand how to make your way in what's often a very cruel and pitiless world. And how that actually makes a lot of sense for the Western genre. Because it was life in the Old West is hard.
Yeah.
They make it really clear in this movie.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. Very accurate.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Yeah, really tough. But you have this central character, Maddie Ross, who is clearly dealt a hard hand from the beginning when her dad was killed. And at the very end of the movie, we see that her whole life was not easy.
No, it's like the... a lot of times she would say, "Hey, I will get the lawyer on." Not just with the, mm-hmm. but even with in the wild, in the Indian territory, she would tell, you know, Rooster, "Hey, I'm gonna, this is fraud. If you don't do this, I'll turn." So it's almost like I'll tell my mom on you. So she's it's the journey of her from a child to an adult, and you can see that at certain points in the movie, she's still, even though she's in the wild, even though she's cutting dead bodies of trees, she still hasn't grown up yet. But I think the whole movie is a story about this person, this youth that pushes so hard into learning to be an adult and has to deal with the consequences of that.
Oh, yeah. She totally has this naivete at the beginning that's taken away. I mean, every time she talks to, like, Tom Chaney and says, like, "I expect to take you in," to expect that the rule of law applies to the Old West is extremely naive.
Well, I thought it was funny because she did such a good job in a lot of scenes where she was just so bossy. I was like, damn, I could learn from this 14-year-old girl right now. So she was like, you know, she was so pushy. She had no fear about negotiating or saying what she wanted to say or getting Rooster to even do it. And then there's like those other moments where she's like, you know, where she was asking him, like, "Marshall, like, we're going to be okay here, right? Or like, we'll be okay." Like, there was like these moments where you could see that childishness and vulnerability. Yeah. And that was so interesting to see. And then, like, obviously when she couldn't shoot him right. And even the fact that when she said there was 50 Marshalls waiting, I was like, girl, come on. Like you should have said
50.
You should have said 3 or something, you know, like, and you know, or like 5, but like 50. I was like, oh, you're a just kid. Like you just said something so silly. So that was really interesting to see those moments too.
Yeah. That was a great moment when LaBeouf rides away. And she's all, we don't need him, do we?
Right, exactly, exactly. That's the one. Yeah.
No, she is my favorite character in this movie, and my favorite performance in the movie. She's
She was.
I'm surprised I haven't seen more from Hailee Steinfeld. She's really, really
she's
good here,
good.
Playing a tough role. It's hard to be a 14-year-old with all this, you know, really verbose, intelligent dialogue, and not seem like you're just like a caricature.
Right. Yeah. She wasn't.
And I saw her own
believable.
Really holding her own. With Jeff Bridges and Matt Damon.
She was believable. Yeah.
But
Matt Damon did really great too. He was like maybe number two, like number one, number two. He's up there.
I saw one review of the movie saying that they felt like the Maddie character, as good as Hailee was just kind of too impossible to pull off because she didn't seem like she could be a real 14-year-old.
I think she could be a real 14-year-old in the Wild West.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I disagree. She wouldn't be my 14-year-old sister. Although, to be fair, actually, my sister, if she was in the Wild West, would kick this girl's ass. Like,
you
my
think
sister,
so?
Oh, for sure. My sister's a beast. And, like, she's been like that since probably, like, 10 years old. Like, she would tell people what's what and how's that. And, like, because of the age that we live in, she's not forced to do stuff like this.
Right.
But like, if it needed to be done, she'd be like, I'm negotiating this horse, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And then I would also still see those moments of like vulnerability.
Yeah. So, yeah, growing up in this world,
I can actually see it.
You do what needs to be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in that moment where she's, you know, she's identifying her dad's body and kind of putting the body away, and you could tell this is somebody who's bereaved.
Yeah.
And I continue to get that sense of her even as she is trying to, you know, be a hardened, you know, trail rider in the West.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just her journey into the land of death begins, and into adulthood is like knowing that there's a time frame on her life.
Yeah.
And just sitting there and that, seeing the dead body, and
mm-hmm.
it's just, I don't know, it's just a very mythic movie, but
it is.
I guess all of their movies are kind of mythic.
It's a rare female protagonist for the Coen brothers. I think they're only
one. Oh, really?
It's a rare child character in a Coen Brothers movie. Yeah. Also, I think the only real character who's like under 18 years old.
They really capture like men. Like, I feel like they capture men, and there's always in their movies.
Yeah, I think I've noticed that too.
Yes, you have noticed that.
Like the struggle of a man being a man is sort of like I feel it's like their thing, and I feel like sometimes they explore that through the men's shoes, which I know that sounds crazy, but in Miller's Crossing, you know, you look at their shoes, and I remember thinking, oh, that's what those guys would have worn, you know, those wingtips and all that. And I was thinking, I got a real sense of connection, almost like grandfathers or something, you know, from the shoes. Like, and in this movie, when LaBeouf walks, his spurs always jangle, you know? So you get a sense of, I guess, men's vanity from the shoes that they wear. And I always thought you could tell a lot of people from people by their shoes. So,
yeah.
And their cars.
Yeah. Rooster Cogburn.
And their sunglasses.
Rooster Cogburn certainly has no vanity.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Well, except during that scene, the shooting scene.
Yeah. He has vanity ego. That's not.
He's got an ego. Yeah.
About, you know, clothes or shoes.
Yeah. His ego, but not vanity, I think.
Jeff Bridges was nominated for an Oscar for this.
I might agree if I could understand what he was saying a little bit more.
What do you guys think about his performance?
I thought it was really good.
I thought so too.
I would have said, I would have given him the Oscar. I don't know who was against it or he was running against him, but I will say my only criticism is in that great, you know, pre-Arnold line that he said, "Fill your hand, you son of a bitch." I think John Wayne did it better, but, and that's such a classic line, but yeah, I thought he did great.
I thought he did great too. I just literally couldn't understand it sometimes, and that was annoying. But they do that sometimes.
That too. Yeah.
They do that in some of their other movies. I can't remember what they were, but it's like you can't have that thick of an inflection or whatever. Like you have to do something to make it.
It usually
clear.
Doesn't bother me, but it bothered me here. I did have a little bit of trouble getting past that voice.
You know, I was watching that Altman documentary on Netflix, I think yesterday, and it was talking about how he got fired off a movie because he let people talk over each other. And for realism or something. I don't know. I could, maybe you're right. Maybe you could tone it down like a notch.
Just in certain parts.
Yeah.
It was just like, we get that that's how he sounds, but he doesn't always have to sound like that every single second. Like, he can tone it down slightly so we can hear what the hell he's saying. Just saying.
I'm trying to find out who he was up against. Give me a second.
I'll talk about Matt Damon in the meantime, because I thought his performance was killer.
He's great.
But that's the thing. If, like, I like Bridges in this too, but out of the three leads, he's my least favorite of the three.
Bridges is?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I only have a spot number one, which is Haley and Matt.
Right.
And then number two is Bridges. So overall, we agree.
To a degree, I feel like he's doing Jeff Bridges. And he's doing like an old man, extra ornery Jeff Bridges.
Huh.
But I feel like he's a little bit playing off his natural charisma and sleepwalking through it. Not that he's not very entertaining to watch.
I think that was right for the character, though.
I feel like Academy Awards are sort of like MVPs in sports, you know? Part of it is your performance, and part of it is everything that surrounds you and your record, you know? How good the movie is and how... So it's not necessarily like
good
best acting, but...
No, it's true. Like, a good movie is more likely to win a best actor award than a bad movie, no matter how... Even if the performance of the bad movie was, like, amazing.
Yeah. Well, but Matt Damon, though, I want to talk about it specifically, though, because from the second you saw him, and I said this to Josh earlier, too, and he kicked his legs out on the porch, it was just like... You knew who this guy was, like, right away from that. And I was just like, oh, it was so good. And you can see just, like, the way he was looking at her, kind of, like, what was coming. So then when she woke up and he was there in the room and he's, like, saying that he was going to steal a kiss, like, you kind of felt that. You're like, yeah, like, you could see that happening. And then when he was leaving that first time from the campsite, like, there was, like, that tension between them that was so, like, forbidden. I was like, ugh, was just captured so well. It was perfect.
And it wasn't, you know, surprisingly, it wasn't really, I wasn't really creeped out by it because right. I felt like in the Old West, mm-hmm. she is like ageable.
Right. And yeah. They I agree
could,
with you.
And they could probably die in a week or so in the Old West.
Yeah.
I thought, but not now, but in the Old West times.
Yeah. I kind of was like, I'm okay with this. I
think my favorite Matt Damon moment was early on when he's in Haley's room and he just like, he just kind of shows his badge like, I'm a Texas Ranger.
Yeah. That was really funny.
Like very funny. And you instantly see, oh, this guy, yeah, he's got a little bit of, yeah, he does have that little bit of pride and that little bit of vanity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cow lick.
Yeah.
Oh, but he was, oh God, he was so good. In it.
Oh,
it, so
Jeff Bridges good. Lost to Colin Firth for the King's Speech.
Oh, I would have given it to Jeff Bridges.
I, out of the lineup here, I would have given it to Jesse Eisenberg for Social Network.
Who was, what's the lineup?
Oh, yeah.
It's Colin Firth for King's Speech, Javier Bardem for Beautiful, Jeff Bridges for True Grit, Jesse Eisenberg for Social Network, and then James Franco in 127 Hours.
I would have given it to Jeff Bridges. It's a more American story than the King's Speech.
Whoa.
But
whoa.
As Social Network's an American story, too. And I seriously, I thought Eisenberg was so good in that. Completely captured Zuckerberg.
That was a great soundtrack, too.
He yeah. might win it for Lex Luthor, so... Cross your fingers.
I'm not. I mean, I think he's got potential to be really good as Lex Luthor. I'm not going to say Oscars. That's a little premature. But I thought it was good casting.
Yeah, I liked the movie though. I liked. I also noticed that you know the Coen brothers. They don't. I don't know if it was this movie or all their movies. You guys would be know more. But there's a certain epicness to like a John Ford Western.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all closed in. Even when they showed things that were majestic, like a forest of trees or something, it never felt like you were seeing it from a faraway shot, like those Monument Valley shots of John Ford. It was always like sort of claustrophobic, more Liberty Valance than The Searchers, which I don't know if every single one of their movies has this claustrophobic, almost play-like.
I wish I'd seen more Westerns to understand your references.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Well... You know that shot in Star Wars where Luke is putting his foot up and the two suns are setting and the music swells?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, well, that moment, in like we were talking about in True Grit, might be the moment when she gets her gun or the moment when she rides Little Blackie out of the barn. But it's shot in such a way that it doesn't make it feel far
away.
There are
a couple wide shots. There are a couple of big vistas. And
sure.
They're in there.
But it doesn't feel like that. Like, they're there, but there's not, like...
Or what about the moment where they're perched waiting for the red pepper gang to
yeah,
come
that's,
in?
That feels,
and that's a big, long, wide shot.
It is a wide shot, but it doesn't feel like an epic shot, if that makes any sense. It's like there's a thing there, and they're really close to them. Camera's close. Now, this could be wrong. You know, this is just opinion, but it doesn't feel like an epic Western the way traditional epic Westerns go. I don't know.
Right.
To me, though, what do I know? Nothing.
Well, I actually don't know. I think some of it, like some of the shots were big, but not that yeah. many. Like, actually, once you said that, I don't think it's...
Or like that hanging tree shot with the corpse hanging way
right.
up on the high
right.
branch. That gorgeous.
Yeah.
And a lot of the climax, you know, where you have all the sudden reversals, and it looks like Chaney is about to kill Paley, and then Damon comes out of nowhere, and then there's the face-off between Rooster, and then all of a sudden Chaney gets back up. There's like a whole bunch of action climaxes in like five or ten minutes.
Yeah.
And that felt very, very John Ford to me. Very classic Western. And the music was even almost getting to that John Williams place you were talking about, where suddenly you have these really big action movie stings.
Yeah, I liked it. It was great. I guess what I would say is, like, even when they were riding, and he was riding her to save her, and he has to shoot Little Blackie, the last vestige, symbolically, yeah. of her childhood.
Yeah, that was my favorite, probably, scene in the whole film, is that last ride.
You never see, like... it's just great. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking, horse. Though, when Blackie went down. And
he was stabbing him?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Little Blackie had to die, though.
But you had to understand. Yeah,
he had to save her life, though.
Yeah.
Symbolically, Little Blackie was her childhood. Little Blackie maybe was her idea of what adulthood was. Oh, I've got a horse. I'm riding it.
I mean, you're right.
There are consequences to everything in adulthood.
You're very right to call this stuff out. This is a very classic hero's journey, coming-of-age story.
Yeah.
And all those moments of her losing her innocence and finding out what the world is really like.
And that journey, that night journey back across the River Styx.
Yeah.
You know, back to...
Oh, yeah. 100%.
The overworld or whatever, out of the underworld.
Yeah. But she starts from a place of not being completely, especially now with modern comparisons, not being totally childlike. A very right. precocious 14-year-old.
Yeah. like a boss.
Totally like a boss. Mm-hmm. And then in those final moments where we don't even she blacks out and then we wake up 25 years later.
Yeah, that was a good cut.
We never see Rooster again, and we never see LaBeouf again.
But that made it feel Coen-esque.
Isn't that how life is, though? You know, like
yes,
let people sail away, even though they hold such a special place in your heart.
Time gets away from you.
So true.
Time gets away from you, and those people who you thought you would have a chance to say that final goodbye to, you usually don't have that chance.
And she, you know, in this world, she would maybe become a bitter old maid. In our world, she might, you know, run Vogue or something. But
Why did she become a bitter old maid?
Well, she was an independent woman in a time when, you know, they didn't want independent. Maybe those people aren't attractive.
I think the phrase she used was, I never had any use for marriage.
No, she said she didn't have time for that frivolity or something like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out, like, why she didn't make that choice. Do you think she was in love with the ranger?
LaBeouf?
I don't think it was any sort of like.
I want it to be that.
I know. But what the age difference? I mean, come on.
What was it, like a 15-year age difference, you think?
At least. Matt Damon looks way younger than he actually
is. She's only 12 or 13 in the movie, right? 14?
No, she's 14.
14 in the movie.
Maybe he was like 28.
No.
30?
At least 35.
Yeah. He wasn't 35.
Yeah, at least 35.
Maybe at least 30 something.
31? They could be together, you guys.
In the Old West, they could have been. Like, you know those old Confederate generals that they married, like, in their 70s, the 20-year-olds?
Yeah.
And their wives were alive during, you know, World War II?
Yeah, wait, did you read that same article on something recently with, like, there's a couple of survivors? Yeah,
yes.
I even saw it from your page, but, yeah, like, they're the children of Confederate soldiers.
Yeah, they're right. Yeah, that
it's
was
so
me.
Cool. Yeah,
I did share that.
Yeah, and I read it. I thought it was so cool.
Oh,
yeah, they're like 92 or whatever. Now.
I noticed on my Facebook I didn't get a like from you. So if you do read,
I'm gonna double check.
I don't like every Facebook article that I actually enjoy.
But if you enjoy
that's
it,
true.
Well, that's our self.
Sometimes I just want to anonymously enjoy it and not tell people, hey, I liked this thing.
Well, sometimes I want to. That's why they invent thank you. You know.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for all the great things you share.
You're welcome.
As the blanket. Thank you.
Yeah, but they got, what did it say though? They got married like in their 70s, right?
Yeah, and like the girls were like 20 or something.
Yeah. That was a really cool.
And they're still alive. The children of Civil War generals are still alive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
But that final flash forward to me really does change the cast of how you see the entire previous movie. Because now suddenly I see it as this was like the great adventure of her life.
Right.
This is like her fondest memories. It's, these times, you know, like chasing down Tom Chaney and really like living up life in the Old West. And it's kind of her.
And then
her
she lived her whole life and died, and everything sucked afterwards. This is a depressing movie.
But at least she had those moments where she was alive and really did something. Yes. In that way, it's optimistic. I really would use the term nostalgic.
Sure.
It's, you know, that longing, you know. Kind of longing and remembering the good old days, which is bittersweet.
It is. It does put a bittersweet spin on it because we think in our modern world that, hey, that a woman like that's going to be amazing and have an amazing life. But back then, it almost says that, hey, this isn't a story about your world. It almost reminds us that, hey, this is a story about a very different time and very different people.
This is real life. It was hard.
Yeah.
Bad things happened.
This wasn't a set. This was like what would happen if you were a cowboy back then.
Yeah.
Not technically because they weren't ranchers, but you know what I mean.
But it's sad to see that, like, yeah, the adventure of her life was when she was a teenager.
But that's how life is too. Some people like win the Super Bowl when they're 23, and then
it's all downhill. Then it's all downhill from there. Yeah,
that's sad.
It is sad.
I mean,
that makes me want to not do that.
Hey, that's maybe the catharsis of this movie. Maybe that's part of the effect of this movie. You know, makes you want to live life to the fullest.
Yeah,
it's.
And keep both your arms.
Yeah, man. The more I talk about this movie, the more it is a movie that kind of rises in my estimation. At first, I felt like there's it's just a little bit too straightforward, and I wish there was more digging you could do.
Well,
but straightforward
there's a lot of digging.
Straightforward
of
doesn't digging. Have to be bad. Sometimes it just is on the surface. This film got 10 Oscar nominations and won 0.
Oh, that's sad.
And I think for that reason, many people view it as it's the Coen brothers, but not quite at their best. Well, maybe a step too slow.
I don't view it that way at all.
I thought it was
step
great.
Too slow? That's a harsh judgment for this movie.
But I'm not going to judge it that harshly. What really carried me through, and it's not even the story or the characters or the acting or anything. I just It's such a beautiful film. And I'll like half of my notes are just about like, wow, that shadow is gorgeous, or wow, the like the light coming through that window. Or man, when you're just when you're approaching Rooster in that first courtroom scene when we get introduced to him, and he seems far away at first, and you just get a little closer and a little closer. I was like, wow, this is just great visual storytelling.
Yeah, great visual storytelling.
And a lot of those shots and the backdrops and just everything about the way this film was made is just it's just a pleasure to watch.
Right? It's very real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very gritty.
It is really gritty. It's gritty, but it finds that beauty in the grit as well.
Sure.
And it's got an entertaining story to carry you through too. This is not like a tough movie to sit through in any way. So for all those reasons, at least from a movie making sense, and I don't know, do you guys have final thoughts on this?
Yes.
What about Josh Brolin?
Miscast. I would say
miscast. Really?
I do think that because he's such a good. I just see him as a big beefy guy, and like I saw that guy as a weasel, but I don't think he did bad in his role at all.
He was
just slightly miscast.
His voice. He was affecting a dumb guy voice.
Yeah, his voice was weird. That's true.
It was kind of a funny dumb guy voice, though. I actually liked it. I liked the choices.
It didn't ruin it or anything. He's a great actor. I just think of him as a big, tough,
you know,
don't mess with me, no country for old men kind of guy.
Yeah.
But they keep talking about. I think Josh Brolin's a really good actor.
Yeah, and he's a great actor.
They keep talking about Tom Chaney, and Tom Chaney's a big character in this movie, but he only has a couple actual scenes. So Josh Brolin's really got to make him feel like a character, and I think he does.
Yeah, I think he did a good job.
The guy they got in the 69 movie was like, he's such a weasel that you want to just kill, you want to just shoot him yourself. But
yeah.
Yeah. It's a little different, but it still worked. Everything worked. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Jackie.
Oh, yeah. Did you have something?
No, I just had like a separate comment because we were watching the scene where she cuts the guy out of the tree. But mm-hmm. when the Indian came up and Rooster had to, you know, he put his hand on his gun, which obviously happens in like every situation. I just thought it was so interesting that like in the scope of human time, it's like what, like 150 years ago or something, right?
Something like that. 130 to 150. Yeah.
Yeah, but so that's, I mean, that's definitely a long time ago, but at the same time, like, not even that long ago when we have people who are still alive who's, like, grandfathers around them. But it's just so interesting how much we've developed because, like, today you don't have to, like, put your hand on your gun when you meet people.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, I for some reason I found that really striking. It was, like, every time, like, you just don't know what's going to happen and it's just such a different time. But still, it's not like it was, like, you know, 2,000 years ago when we were all still here too. So I just thought that was interesting. I see how much has changed since then.
The older I get, the less old 130 years seems.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like it's like, man, that was just a few generations ago.
Right.
And
yeah.
it's like we're essentially the same animal. We're just the same animal with just like slightly different technology.
I was tripped out on that Twilight Zone episode where the guy would live forever, but there was a man and he was like, was that your grandfather in the Civil War? It was a picture of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, I guess we still have those people, but then it made me weirded out. But it's also like, you know, when I see movies like Changeling, where it's like the 20th century, but the early part of the 20th century, and you're like, it was like us, but it wasn't, it was so similar, but so different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's an interesting part of movies. And I love that this movie captured that vibe of these people are different and capturing that difference.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. So yeah, this is a film that it's hard for me to dig into as much thematically because I don't know if there is as much going on as something like A Serious Man, but I don't think that's to its discredit.
Right.
I think it plays very well as a film and just it is an example of old school movie craft. And the Coens honestly doing something really different in trying to tell such a straightforward tale. And I think they do a great job of it. I now almost want to see it again, actually. Because I liked it that much more than the first time. I was all ready to come in and kind of shit on this movie, but I'm not going to. Coming in on the side of overall liking it.
Jackie and I brought in the toilet paper of knowledge to wipe away.
The toilet paper of knowledge.
Of good taste.
How do you guys feel about it overall?
I liked it a lot.
You liked it a lot?
It actually got me emotionally. Like, I was, like, teared up at certain points.
There were moments, by the end of that, again, that final ride of Jeff Bridges, just carrying her back to town. That's a really touching moment.
Hit home. And I think I actually, a lot of time, I don't like epicness. I just think it's so cheesy and lame. And I'm like, ugh, so annoying. But like, I hate people. I hate movies. It usually inspires those kind of feelings. But the epicness was right on. I was like, whoa, it's like some human stuff right now. And it, yeah. It touched me.
That's, it's an example where, in this case, it really helps that they did feel like real people.
Yeah, for sure.
Not just, you know, the young girl and the old cowboy. They're not archetypes.
Right. They had one Coen-esque character, though, I think, actually. That guy who was, like, running around and making animal noises all the time.
Oh, yeah.
That's the chicken,
the chicken guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the one.
But what
weirdo.
Was with that guy? What's with
they
the chicken guy?
They couldn't help themselves. They're just like, we have to have a character like this.
He's like the C-3PO of this movie.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, and I like the horse trader too. The guy who Maddie was
talking to. Yeah, actually, he was a little funny. Yeah,
a little Coen.
Are we trading again?
But yeah, he was great too, and that was a great scene overall, just in terms of establishing her character right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
This is a girl who is not to be messed with.
You never wonder, like, after, because you know they were talking about how young she was. I read before, and you never, after that scene, you never wonder. Oh. Will she be able to handle herself with
right.
these great
it's
actors?
Like, no,
after
know.
That scene, you're like,
you,
oh, wow.
You 100% know. Yeah. And she beans the guy in the head with the apple and mm-hmm. crosses the river on the horse.
Yep, she's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
I am surprised, too, that she's not in a million other things.
She should be. She really should be. And completely the opposite of, like, a Larry Gopnik from last movie, who's just totally passive. She's so active and uh-huh. so focused on her goals and so determined.
She inspired me so much.
She is kind of an inspirational character.
She is. When she crossed the river, I was like, oh, my God, I love her so much. I was actually talking about, like, how cute she was and how much I love her, like, from that scene, which is cute is a weird thing to say that it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy, but I was just, like, so proud of her almost.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, and you're so inspiring.
It inspires emotions that Coen Brothers movies don't always inspire.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, wow, that's sweet, or wow, this is exciting, or
yeah. And so I'm like, oh, this is so annoying and neurotic.
It was, yeah, because it was funny when you did first ask at the beginning of the movie, oh, is this going to be another bleak movie?
Yeah.
And it was going to say, in a way, yes, but in a way, no.
No,
it's really not a bleak movie.
Bleak. But the ending was the right touch because I was gonna start getting annoyed. Like, I was hoping they would save her, obviously, because like the horse just died and they're so close or whatever. But then I was like, if this is like a true happy ending, it's gonna be annoying. Like, if you would see her get better and then like Matt Damon's character is there and then he professes his love and the game, it would just be so annoying if it was too happy ending. So I liked that it was measured and came down to like her not having an arm.
Yeah,
and then she was also alone for the rest of her life. I was like, whoa, okay, cool. Like, it was right.
Yeah, it was just the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't even necessarily get the sense that, like, she, like, hated her life at the end of the movie. She's just, like, she's a hard woman, and this is the life she led, and she's cool with it.
Yeah.
I don't know that she was so cool with it. She seemed lonely.
She was kind of bitter. Yeah. She was lonely.
Maybe a little bit.
She was so lonely, she moved his body into their plot.
Well, yeah, he was buried in a Confederate plot. You can't just let him rest in a Confederate plot.
Well, I thought he was a Confederate.
No, I thought he... I thought he was.
He rode with Quantrell's Raiders, right? So those were those Confederates?
I didn't get that reference, but I thought she moved him out of the Confederate plot because he fought for the Union. Maybe I was wrong about that.
Well, I
thought she moved him to
go ahead.
Make him close. To, I don't know.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I thought she
but
wanted
both
him to be
would
close
make sense. Yeah.
To her, because then people were saying they were like, why did like because she was saying that people were saying she didn't even know him that well, so why'd she do that? Because she put him like in the family plot or something, right?
You might be right.
But so that was like her, she was like hungry for some closeness.
That, I never thought of that, but that totally makes sense.
I think that's what it was.
Because this was this moment in her life that she's clinging to and she's clinging to everything that is associated with it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Because I thought when they got in the argument that like he's all, I rode with Quantrell and I thought Quantrell was a Confederate guy. And then I thought.
Oh, I guess you're right. I guess they did both fight for the Confederate.
He said, Matt Damon said Northern Virginia. And I was like, well, because it's Northern, did that mean they were Union? Or
apparently both LaBeouf and Rooster fought for Confederate.
Oh.
That makes more sense.
I guess that does make sense.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. So yeah, it is just out of pure sentimentality then that mm-hmm. she wanted him to be a little bit closer.
Yeah.
He didn't have a particularly happy ending either. He just joined like a traveling carnival and was like a gunslinger and then died.
Yep.
And you know, that's a part of the Coen Brothers, like those old men, those broken down old men.
Yeah.
Yep. Some old men in this movie, and even if they're not goofy characters, lots of great facial hair. Lots of great Coen-esque facial hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give him that.
I love when she came up at the end to that fair and the other guy didn't get up, and I don't remember the exact line, but she basically called him like trash for not getting up. I was like, damn. Call him out. I like it.
It was a little different, though, than when she called out the guys in the... When she was younger, like, it was like when she was old, it was almost like...
Bitter.
And, yeah, she was kind of pathetic even for calling them out, in my opinion. I don't know Not in a bad way.
I could see that, that it was kind of like, really, you're on this right now?
And but, that made me sympathize with her even more, because I was like, oh, Maddie, you could have, oh, you should have got married.
She would have been a hard person to be married to, you know?
Why? Why? Because in that time, when that social structure, yeah, but in art, yeah, in that time, she would have been a tough...
She just seems like somebody who, she seems like somebody who knows when she's right and is always right, and you don't want to negotiate with her.
I would love to marry her, because then I'm like, oh, I got to deal with the negotiations. No, actually, you know, you can negotiate with my wife.
Can you talk to Verizon?
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's a dream girl. Yeah,
my dream girl is like a girl like her, but that knows karate, so I don't have to worry about. Like, if we go down a dark alley or something.
Again, though, as a not pushy person, she would just win every argument, and she would just wear me down.
Yeah, but what do you care? But she'll protect you.
I don't need protection, Jackie.
I have arm wrestling.
I'm the protector.
You need protection.
I'm sorry. I love both of you guys.
Okay, look, let's move to our final segment of the week. It's a segment called Raising Arizona. So, the quiz of the week for today is about fugitive criminals.
What?
Because there's a criminal on the lam in this movie. So
I know why, but...
No, let me keep explaining it.
Okay.
So that's why I decided to make a quiz about fugitive criminals, because it matched what was going on in the movie, Jackie. So here we go. 10 questions about fugitive criminals. Each of them are multiple choice, so just say what you think the answer is.
Okay.
It'll be easy. You'll figure it out.
All right.
Question number one. According to a list assembled by True TV, who you know is a really good source on these things, very trustworthy, what is the number one destination for American criminals on the lam?
Mexico. I'm supposed to wait.
Yeah.
You could guess ahead of time if you want.
No.
The options are Canada, Mexico, and Cuba.
Ooh.
American criminals?
The number one destination for American criminals on the lam.
I would go to Cuba because there's nothing to connect us, but I'm going to say Mexico.
I'm going to say Canada.
Jackie is correct.
Boom, wow. Baby.
True TV cites both the proximity to the U.S. and the amount of empty territory to hide out in is the reason.
Oh, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the Indian Territory in True Grit.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Easy to just kind of travel around and get lost in. But question number two. Meanwhile, a CNBC article about the places fugitives should escape to if they wanted to have the best experience as a fugitive criminal.
Oh, it's a BuzzFeed kind of listing? That's such a weird MSNBC article, but okay.
Right.
The 21 top 10 best places if you're a fugitive. Okay.
Yeah. Best places to escape to. is they listed what country is their number one company, what number one country to escape to? Monaco, Tahiti, or Andorra?
I don't even know what Andorra is, but I'll go with Tahiti.
See, I would want to say Russia.
Well, none of those are Russia.
That's a problem.
Those are all, they're all small little countries or principalities.
They're saying, why are they saying it's the best? Like, they're just...
They're
saying it's for a number of reasons, the best place for criminals to escape to. And I'll explain why after.
Monaco?
The correct answer is Andorra.
What is that? It sounds like a planet on Star Trek.
Andorra, it's basically a country right between France and Spain.
Oh.
One of the smallest countries in Europe. Great weather, great skiing, very high life expectancy, and no extradition policy to the United States.
Wow.
So you're close to real countries. But it's a great place to live, and they can't send you back.
If they decide to do an extradition thing... Or if you have to take the wrong route on a road and you're in France or something, then you're kind of screwed.
Well, you could take a day trip to France and kind of hang out and put sunglasses on and then go back to Andorra if enough time has passed. Yeah. I'm keeping this in mind in case I ever have to go on the lam. They're never catching me.
No, because they won't know if to find you in Andorra because you never made a public statement about where you would go.
No. And they wouldn't listen to my podcast for clues.
Right, they would never do that.
Or maybe I'm doing this on purpose because I'm actually just going to go to Mexico.
And you're saying that now, but what we're really going to do is go to Andorra because you think they're off the trail.
Damn it, that was my plan. Question number three. If a fugitive escapes to Mexico, Mexican authorities will return the prisoner to the U.S., on one condition.
I got it. I know this one.
Okay.
Oh.
No, go ahead, read them.
All right. Well, you should let Jackie guess first. Now okay. If you okay.
No, Jackie, you can go first.
Jackie's a lawyer. So she's probably gonna
if a fugitive escapes to Mexico, Mexican authorities will return the prisoner to the U.S. on one condition: A, the U.S. will not seek the death penalty in the case; B, the U.S. has no Mexican nationals currently in custody; C, the U.S. pays Mexico $20,000 per criminal.
Jackie.
And you know this one for sure?
I for sure know this one, I think. I know
I'm
a lot
to
of
your mind.
There it is.
$20,000? Frank, guess?
Death penalty.
Oh.
Frank is right.
That sucks.
Yeah. I watch a lot of Dateline. You ever watch Dateline NBC?
Not really.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently that policy has been in place for 30 years because Mexico is anti-death penalty. So they just want to ensure any criminal we send back doesn't get killed by the state.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of cool with Mexico, I think.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty anti-death penalty, so I'm like, yeah, keep that going.
How interesting.
Are you anti-death penalty? Let's get into the real top issues
on
this
show. Let's do our I think our political roundtable because we always like to do that now.
People shouldn't kill anybody. If you do, like, I don't know, you have to deal with those consequences.
I can't say I'm 100% against it.
I just feel like the state should not be murdering people. And that's essentially what it comes down to.
Like when
I'm not a pure eye for an eye guy.
Yeah. Hmm.
As long as it's a deterrent enough to have a life sentence and keep the guy out of society.
I always tell, like, if I don't know someone, I'll text, know them that well, or just start messaging them. I'll message my friend, Wesley Gabriel, and I'll say, hey, I'm with this guy from, you know, where my improv group, not this one, but right. my newer ones. And I'll be like, hey, if he murders me, I believe in the death penalty if they kill me. But that's just if they kill me. In general, I don't believe in the death penalty. I don't know.
You just
know.
Feel like it's okay for you to die?
No, no. I'm saying to what? Be avenged.
Oh, yeah. But how oh okay, okay. Oh.
Yeah. I don't even really believe it. I just sort of say it.
No, if somebody murders me, do not kill them. You should just torture them. That's fine with me.
Interesting. That's not even quite right either. I just think, ideally, as a society, we would be more evolved and not want to take another human life because taking human life is bad. And I'm more with that and would like to think of myself as evolved. But I wonder, like, if I was this girl and somebody shot my dad like that, I might want to do the same thing.
That's the argument I always get from, like, death penalty supporters is, yeah, but if it was, like, your daughter and somebody, like,
I'm
you
not
know,
sure
horribly
if I
would, murdered yeah. her, like, wouldn't you want that guy to die?
And I think there's something really human about that. That
I think so too.
Happens.
I just the only at that point though, the only reason you really want death as opposed to a life sentence is out of revenge, and I don't think we should be making laws based on revenge.
No, I see that. I just also think that there's something like it's hard for humans to separate themselves from their ego and pride and all that too.
Not to mention
I'm not saying that it's right. Yeah. I'm just talking.
Not
about
to mention
like
if you
possible.
See that guy die, I don't actually think it gives you closure.
I think it helps some people.
Maybe.
I just
want to
help you.
I just want to never find out. I just feel like people shouldn't kill people. People shouldn't... I don't know.
I can agree with that statement,
just have
Frank.
A better life, you know?
I agree that people shouldn't kill people.
People shouldn't kill people and we should all have a better life. I'm glad... I think we were all in agreement on that, on Accept the Mystery.
Good. Our political roundtable has come to a consensus. I love it.
Question number four. Richard Lee McNair was a criminal convicted of a murder in 1987 in North Dakota. He has escaped from prison twice, having earned himself a spot on the U.S. Marshals Service 15 Most Wanted list and a feature on the show America's Most Wanted. Which of these is not one of the ways he has successfully escaped from prison? A. Hiding in a freezer. B. Hiding in a mail bag. C. Hiding in a ventilation duct.
Which year did you say?
1987.
Oh, wait. This guy's around?
I think he is now actually back in prison.
Oh, thank God.
But two times he escaped. So two of those ways he successfully escaped. One of those I made up.
God, I don't.
Mailbag,
freezer,
freezer, mailbag, ventilation duct. You're saying mailbag,
mm-hmm.
Frank?
Freezer.
Frank is right.
Aww.
Yeah, he did not add a freezer, but he did. He managed to like I guess zip himself up in a mailbag, and the mailman took him away.
The mailman didn't notice.
You would think you would notice, right?
That's why I thought that's the one.
Like, you should just keep yourself really still.
I guess.
And you
you're
can make
so
yourself
heavy.
Look like mail. You're just a heavy package.
I guess.
In 2007, he was finally captured by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Go Canada.
So go Canada.
Well, so maybe that's maybe Mounties. That whole thing, those criminals should not head to Canada.
Right? In fact,
the Mounties will find you.
In fact, here's another story about the Mounties. Albert Johnson lived in an isolated cabin in the Arctic Circle when the Mounties showed up at his door, just actually friendly to warn him that he was trapping without a license. Albert refused to respond to them or even make eye contact with them. So they showed up again with a warrant. This time he opened fire. Then they dynamited his cabin, but he escaped.
Oh, God.
Then the Mounties spent days and days attempting to track him through the Arctic wilderness. He managed to cover 85 miles in 3 days, making false trails through the snow, wearing his shoes backwards to confuse the Mounties.
Wow.
Covering his tracks by like joining herds of caribou and moving with them so he seemed like caribou. He was like a
like a cowboy.
What? Yeah, like a cowboy.
Yeah, holy moly.
But authorities finally caught him. How did they do it? A, they sent a sled dog racing team to track him down and subdue him.
I love dogs. Sorry.
B, wow. They recruited a pilot to hunt him from the air. C, they seduced him with an undercover lady cop.
Ooh.
I feel that's the one we don't think happened.
No, which one of these one really way. Happened?
I'm a sled dog. As a tribute to Jackie, I'll go sled dog.
That's funny. I think I was going to pick sled dogs because I want that to be right because I love dogs.
Well, can we? How does that work? Do we only get to pick? Can we not pick the one the other?
No, you guys can. You guys can pick.
Yeah,
the
I'll
same
pick
answer.
It too. I'll pick it too.
You guys are both picking dogs, and you guys are both wrong.
Is it helicopter?
Is it plane?
It was pilot. That's okay. They found him from the air. Authorities say he never spoke a word, but one time he laughed after shooting a policeman.
Why?
Whoa. This guy's like crazy because he's a crazy psycho.
He's a sociopath
who just happens to live in the Arctic. They probably should have just left him alone in his cabin to do his thing.
He would have killed somebody else if they wandered over there, though.
That's a good point, actually. He probably shouldn't have been loose.
Wait, so he had no criminal past before that?
I don't know. He might have had a criminal past before that. I don't know.
So they just showed up to say you were hunting without a license, and he went ballistic.
Basically, yeah.
Oh, well, leave him alone.
He was
alone.
Just like, fuck you, cops.
Did he kill the cops, though?
Well, he opened fire on cops. I think he at least attempted to kill cops.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes you should just leave people alone, though.
Yeah.
I kind of see that, yeah.
Yeah, just like if you're up in like the coldest, most remote regions of Earth, maybe that's as bad. That's kind of like jail. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you just leave it alone. Like this, yeah.
Interesting. I like that.
So with 5 questions down, Frank's up by 1.
Ooh, good.
But Jackie, Whoa. You can do this.
All right, thank you.
I didn't know it was competition.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a competition.
All right.
So many of our guests do not understand, and it was so satisfying. Sorry, Frank, but like to listen to Jake Regal, who like totally understood the point of this quiz.
Right.
And even then, I was like, once more, who won that quiz? I was like, you're my favorite guest.
I love actually that his Facebook post was like, that Jackie and I competed to see who's the better Jew.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, of course, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Although I think he kind of got that from mine, but that's okay.
Probably. So question number 6, Ralph Bucky Phillips. He was a career criminal who killed a state trooper and escaped from New York City jail, triggering the most expensive manhunt in New York State history. It took 300 officers to take him down. Cops came within inches of catching him on half a dozen different occasions, but he escaped every time. In fact, one of these times, they managed to corner Bucky Phillips. He was cornered in a silo at a baseball bat factory. But he escaped. How did he escape?
Wait, what year?
I actually don't know what year this was.
Oh.
Sounds like an old-timey thing.
I think it's a little older.
Like 1950?
Maybe 50s or 60s.
It sounds like... to me, I was thinking more like Johnny Depp in... was that movie?
Oh, like Public Enemies?
Yeah.
John Dillinger?
But I don't know.
I almost had a John Bucky? Dillinger question, but
his name was Bucky?
Oh, no. Actually, this was like more like 80s.
Oh.
Wow.
No. Sorry, actually. This was 2006.
Whoa.
It was on the most wanted list. Yeah, so this was recent.
Scary.
Okay.
Anyway, he was cornered in a silo at a baseball bat factory. He escaped by A tornado came down and blew the silo away. B, lightning struck the silo and blew out the lights. C, a poorly tossed grenade ignited the baseball bats and sent the silo up in flames.
I'm going to go with grenade.
New York City, you said?
New York City. Although, I think most of this was happening in like New York State.
Which is like wild.
Oh, more wild,
farm
yeah.
country or whatever.
Yeah.
A tornado came down and blew the silo away.
I know what they are.
Lightning struck the silo and blew out the lights. A poorly tossed grenade ignited the bats and sent the silo up in flames.
I'm just gonna go with lightning.
We're back to a tight game as Jackie gets lightning.
Woo!
Yes.
God. Okay.
Wow. Lightning struck the silo. The lights blew out. He escaped under cover of darkness. But he eventually did get caught.
Good.
These guys, that's the moral of the story, by the way, for this quiz. The criminals always eventually end up getting caught. They never just escape forever. Unless you're John Dillinger. No, even Dillinger.
He got killed.
Who's the one who like actually escaped? The famous criminal.
I don't know.
What's his name? The guy who was on the plane and he like hijacked the plane?
Oh, D.B. Cooper.
D.B. Cooper. Didn't D.B. Cooper never get caught?
I don't think so. But they think he died, though. They think he died because the money washed up.
Right.
By the river.
Like, yeah. So. He probably died. That's the only way, though. So Chris Dorner, you might remember this. He was a former LAPD officer who was fired and then went on a revenge killing spree in early 2013.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He eventually killed himself during a standoff with cops in the San Bernardino Mountains, but not before releasing a long, rambling manifesto explaining his motivations. He also thanked, in his manifesto, two out of the following three people. Who did he not actually thank? Ellen DeGeneres, Lance Armstrong, Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
Frank?
I want to say Bill Cosby, too.
You guys are both wrong. He did thank Bill Cosby.
Who did he not?
He did not thank Lance Armstrong.
Oh.
He actually called Lance Armstrong a fraudulent fuck.
Interesting.
So, and he also told Chelsea Clinton she grew up to be a very attractive woman.
Whoa.
He had a lot of stuff going on in that manifesto. He ended it with KCCO.
What's that?
Keep calm and carry on.
Keep calm and carry on. You know, that's why I said the grenade in the New York thing.
Right.
Because like they threw flammable grenades at him and then he shot himself when the house caught on fire, I guess.
Yeah, that's what happened.
That's why I thought like, oh, maybe it was grenades.
That was so crazy when that was happening. Like the cops couldn't find him and he was killing like innocent people.
Yeah.
It was really scary when that was going down.
And they were like the cops were killing like two old, like they shot two people just.
Yeah, they just shot at people who were like in a car that they thought kind of looked like his, something like that.
Yeah, happened. And there was two ladies delivering newspapers.
Yeah.
Imagine your life's hard because you're delivering newspapers as your career and then the cops just shoot you.
Jackie.
They got millions, though, from
the city. You can use the soundboard, Josh, if you want.
I could if I wanted to. There we go. That's a good one.
Spoiler alert.
Question number eight. So now it's still a tie game.
Mm-hmm.
In the last couple decades, prison escapes have decreased dramatically. In 1993, 14,305 prisoners escaped or went AWOL. How many prisoners escaped in 2012?
25, 250, 2,500.
Jackie gets a point again.
No. 2,500 people escaped?
That's what I'm saying. That's a big drop off from 14,000, but doesn't that still sound like a lot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like 2,500 criminals escaped in a year?
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And they're just all, are they all wandering around? How many of them got caught quickly?
I guess, you know, it's low, like those low security things with those, you know, blue collar criminals. Maybe they just went to.
I guess, but I still think even like white collar jail was a little like harder to break out of than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
think so.
Have like pretty high security. I don't know.
Yeah, they've got like perimeter security, and people should be watching this stuff. Man, I do not feel secure when I hear stories like that.
Yeah.
But you know what? There's a lot of criminals in your midst who haven't been caught and never went to jail. So I don't know that you're necessarily in more danger.
What do you mean? Is that like a coded message? Are there criminals in my midst?
No, I just think that there's people.
Are you guys criminals?
We live in LA. There's like a ton of gang activity. There's a bunch of different shit that like people do criminal stuff.
Did you hear about the shooting yesterday at Hollywood and Highland?
No.
There was a shooting like a guy with I guess he had a knife. So police got called in for assault with a deadly weapon and cops fired on him and he got shot down in the middle of the street, Hollywood and Highland.
What?
There were helicopters like circling around yesterday.
Oh my god.
There were like pictures of him, like literally.
Yeah, I saw it on Facebook.
Middle of the street.
Oh my god.
Just lying dead on a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
Jesus. Ugh.
So it's like, that's my neighborhood. I guess there are criminals in my midst.
I think this is a creepy neighborhood, though, in some ways, Josh. There's a lot
say
of
that. I come here every week.
There's a lot. Okay, never mind. This is a great neighborhood.
This neighborhood is, I mean, it's gotten a lot nicer. They're building all these new apartment buildings, and you know, the Hollywood and Highland Center is way nicer.
Yeah,
there's
a ton
of tourists who come here. There are also a lot of creepy people around here.
They're always going to protect areas with tourists. Mm-hmm.
Except then, apparently, it wasn't that protected.
Yeah, I mean, how are you going to control a guy with a knife? He can be walking around and he'll just pop that knife out anywhere.
Anybody could have a knife.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Ugh. Man, this is getting scarier and scarier the more I talk about it.
I don't
want
to leave. Stay here all day.
Just hunker down.
Well, there's a lot of people here that talk to themselves. Like, I've never seen like people have so many conversations with themselves. It's almost like a Stephen King-esque kind of thing. It kind of creeps me out.
But you know what's crazy is I was talking about this shooting yesterday with somebody at a party I went to afterwards. And they said, oh, wait, what race was the guy who the police shot? And I said, oh, he was white. And we're like, ah, oh, good.
What?
Yeah. It's like, oh, it's not another like race-based shooting.
Oh, I guess.
But still.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you just didn't want there to be like riots and things like that.
Right. This is not another riot situation. But still, it's yeah, right in my neighborhood.
Dang.
Dang, indeed. Two more questions. Jackie's up. No, Jack. Is it tied again?
I don't know.
No, you're up. You're up by one.
Yeah, I expect you to always keep score. I never do.
All right, you're up
so
by
don't
one.
Don't look at me,
Jackie. You're up by one.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, the skin.
Frank, you can catch up.
Okay.
Question number 9. Donnie Griffin was wanted in Texas on bank fraud charges when he escaped federal custody. He went back to the apartment where he lives. Always a bad move. Got cornered. He was on the 17th floor. With nowhere to run, Donnie took his chances and dove into the garbage chute. True or false, he survived the fall and escaped from police.
False.
I'll say false.
You guys are both right. He did survive, but he was too bruised to escape, and so he did not escape from police.
Yeah. I think I know that story for some reason. I don't know why.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then final question. The Fugitive was a hit film from 1993 starring Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones.
I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. Harrison Ford, however, was not the first choice to play Dr. Richard Kimball. Who was? Kevin Costner? Sylvester Stallone? Alec Baldwin?
Wow.
Wait, Sylvester Stallone, Alec Baldwin, and who?
Kevin Costner.
That's a hard one.
Alec Baldwin?
I want to say that too, because like back then, wasn't he like an action kind of guy from like Hunt for Red October? I want to say Alec Baldwin or Kevin Costner.
You can only say one, though.
I don't think Sylvester Stallone was already on his way out. Like, the 80s was his decade, right? But then after that, it was, like, not. And then Kevin Costner was still popular, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is, but I kind of want to say Alec Baldwin, but I kind of want to say... I want to say Alec Baldwin more than I want to say Kevin Costner.
It all comes down to this, Frank.
But just to let it be what it is, I'll just say Kevin Costner.
Well, to let it be what it is, you're wrong and Jack is right.
Aww.
It was Alec Baldwin.
Boom, baby. I'm back on top. I'm on a winning streak.
Yeah.
How many?
Well, you're not
won?
I'm not on a streak. No, you're not on a winning streak.
I know.
You're on a winning streak of one.
I know.
But you started
I've started the new streak.
Harrison Ford also replaced Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan in Patriot Games. So I think Alec Baldwin just might have a grudge against Harrison Ford. Like, you keep replacing me and stuff.
He should replace him in Indiana Jones. And then
teach him a lesson.
Alec Baldwin is Indiana Jones?
Yeah, you do all those funny voices.
Can you even possibly imagine that? Does that make any sense?
Just all those Jack voices and stuff?
Yeah.
No, I can't imagine it.
He was such an asshole to his daughter. I love how no one cares about that. It doesn't matter.
Well, she was a thoughtless little pig. Can you blame her?
Josh, I love you.
I mean, Alec Baldwin is just a massive jerk. I think he would admit he's a massive jerk. Everybody knows he is.
I feel like all rich people are sort of jerks. Like when I was a valet at a nightclub, they're all kind of jerky.
But I think Harrison Ford is cool. I've heard stories that he's kind of like a grumpy old man, but I don't think he's a jerk.
Sure. No, I don't know. I'll buy that.
He also like smokes crazy weed. I think he's just like a calm guy.
Chill,
exactly. I do not think all rich people are jerks. I think sometimes money can make you more of a jerk, or at least bring out jerky qualities that might be hidden otherwise.
Yeah.
But anyways, We got to wrap things up, guys.
Oh, no.
We can't go on another tangent. This has been a great, Frank, it's been great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's been awesome.
Yeah. I was glad. I know you called out wanted to do True Grit from the beginning, so I was glad it worked out where you got to do
it's
it.
It's one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was good.
I also like Miller's Crossing, so I think we might have literally the polar opposite taste.
We do. But that's, once again, everybody's got a different take on what the great Coen Brothers movies are, so it's great to get that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, if people want to like find you online or want to see anything you've done,
you can look for me in Canada.
Is there anywhere where would you direct them?
You could if you have so much time on your hands that you are interested in me, get a job, do something with your life. But if you can find me on Instagram, PHRANCMYHERO, or Twitter. I'd love to have you as a Twitter follower. I've got 3 so far. So come on over. I'll log in probably in 6 months.
That's big, guys. You can increase this follower count by like 33%.
Yeah,
right
so
now.
Just, you know, or get a job and don't worry about any of this.
That's so funny. I'm following you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm going to
follow you
on Twitter, too.
You have 18 followers.
Do I really?
Yeah. You just don't tweet. You just said hi on 813.
Oh.
Wait, I'm sorry. You have 4 followers.
Oh.
I did mess up.
Is it like the people I'm following or 18?
It's Dan Wolfberg and me and 2 other people who I don't know who they are.
Who are the other people? Just because
James Haley and Lady Beaver.
Oh, those are.
Who's Lady Beaver?
That's maybe a girl from one of my improv groups, my practice groups. She does videos and stuff. She's pretty cool.
She follows you. I didn't know you have Instagram. You should follow me.
Beaver is an artist, performer, teacher, musician, songwriter, and living room dancer. She doesn't even say her real name. It's
her
just
name's
Lady
Erica.
Beaver.
Erica Lipkiss.
Okay.
She's Jewish.
Ooh.
Ooh. Interesting. Ooh. I like living room dancers.
She just did a video where she's dancing in Italy or in Rome. And people and the tourists around her are just like, what? What are you doing? At the steps and all that stuff.
So Jackie,
if you want to follow someone, follow Erica Lipkiss.
Jackie, where can people find you on the internet?
So, you know my stupid Twitter. Everyone can find me there. It's MacLean, MacQueen.
Yeah, plug yourself with a little bit of
passion. I hate Twitter. I may or may not start just plugging my Instagram directly. I'm going to give it some more thought. So hang tight, people. Maybe next week I'll reveal my Instagram name.
That's a big tease there.
I just followed you, by the way.
Wait, I'm following you, too.
Oh, great.
Instagram, though.
I'm not following you.
I follow you on Twitter.
Wait until next week for the big reveal of Jackie's Instagram.
Maybe,
alias.
Depending on how I feel.
I feel like we should all reveal our Tinders.
Well, my name's Jackie on Tinder.
Yeah, my name is Josh on Tinder.
I don't have
you
Tinder.
You can't find us on Tinder.
You can find it. Just keep swiping and you'll find me. My name is Jackie.
I don't use Tinder, obviously.
27 years old.
Look, I'm at Radio TFB on Twitter, and I'm on Instagram, but I'm not going to tell you my handle. You can probably find it if you wanted to.
Whoa.
You can also go to joshrichmond.net and go to accepthemystery.net and find all that stuff and all that good stuff. Guys, it's been great.
It's been awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Until, what are we doing next time? I don't even know. It's going to be, you know what? Even though there's only one more official Coen Brothers movie left.
We have 7 more episodes.
Yeah, we've got 7 or 8 more
episodes. How are you going to do that?
Magic!
Yep.
No spoilers.
Just,
no spoilers.
All I'm going to say is hang tight. If you think this is wrapping up soon, you are sorely mistaken. There's a lot of exciting stuff in the pipeline for this Coen Brothers podcast.
Yeah, baby.
So until next time, guys. Peace and love.
Peace and love.